Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to see all of you in the audience. And for those of you that are online, today is Wednesday, February 4th. The time is 1:20, and we are in House Judiciary. The members present are Representative Lynn, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Coghill, myself, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Holmes, and Representative Gatto. And we have before us today confirmation of two names for the Ethics Committee, and I'd like to start with those first, and then after that we will be hearing House Bill 88, and I think we can act in a very timely fashion today. Do I understand correctly that Herman Walker is on the telephone in Anchorage?
That is correct.
Can you hear us, Mr. Walker?
I can hear you.
There goes that.
I wonder if he's muted.
It might be muted. If you can hear me.
Okay. Can you hear me? Hello. Can you hear me?
Through here, I can't hear. He's not coming over the speakers.
Okay. We have a little difficulty, so hang on, Mr. Walker. Joyce Anderson, are you in the same room?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I can pick her up over the.
Okay, we're having some technical difficulty, so just bear with us a moment.
Okay.
The clerks can hear you, but no one else in the room can, so.
Maybe the lines in the back of that unit need to be just reset. I don't know if you can open up that.
Why don't we'll go at ease for just a few minutes. Hi.
Being routed via Spain.
Hello, is this Anchorage?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. We are back from At Ease, and for anyone that didn't hear in the beginning, we are in House Judiciary, and we have all members present except Chair Ramirez, who is presenting a bill in House Resources, so we shall proceed without him. The first item of business that we have up today is confirmation of two members for the Ethics Committee, and the first name that is before us is Herman Walker. Mr. Walker, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us. If you could just please state your full name and then just give us a brief overview about why you are interested in remaining on this committee. We're not expecting a full, you know, history, just short and sweet and to the point, and then we'll see if there's any questions for you after that.
Sure, my pleasure. My name is Herman Gene Walker, Jr., and I was... To be honest with you, I was really not sure I wanted to stay on again. I've done three terms on it. And then I decided after much talk and contemplation with my family and with Joyce that it would be good for me to stay on one more term, especially since we're in the middle of dealing with some serious ethical issues, which hopefully we've seen the end of an era. And I felt like continuity would be important, at least going into the next 3 years, which would be the end of my term.
All right. Well, we certainly are grateful for the willingness that you have. I know it takes an effort. It's a sacrifice. It takes from your personal time and everything. We all have a copy of your resume in front of us. Are there any specific questions for Mr. Walker from any of the members of the committee?
I do.
All right, Representative Gruenberg.
Yes, Mr. Walker, this is Max Gruenberg, and my question is going to go to both you and Mr. Cook, it's a general question. It is as much a comment as a question, having been a former member of the Joint Commission, Joint Committee myself. It's important in construing the ethics laws to understand the way the legislature works and the way it has worked. And I think it's particularly important at this point because the laws can be interpreted in a very strict manner that make it very hard for us to conduct normal ethical practices. And on the other hand, they could be interpreted too loosely, too. But I just would like to know your views and what kind of input you seek from the legislature in interpreting the laws as to the way the legislature traditionally has operated in what we have considered to be an ethical fashion. That's a very general question.
And I think it's an important question on two fronts. Number one is we are guided and controlled by the laws that you as legislature make. Our role is to interpret those laws to a certain extent. In order to make that determination, we rely heavily on the legislators that are members of the committee, because we're not legislators. We just don't know the ins and outs and intricate workings of how you guys have done things traditionally, historically. And so in order for us to see if we're applying the rules in a fashion that doesn't conflict with tradition and yet meets the spirit of the law, we rely heavily upon the legislators for their input and guidance on those questions.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
I think that's a really, I was hoping you would say that, and I would hope Mr. Cook and the other members would feel similarly. And I would hope also that if there is a question and you can do it, that you from time to time possibly send out a message, an email or a letter or something to the legislators and staff generally for their input before making a final decision, if you feel it would be helpful to get broad responses. And the reason I'm saying this is not just because, as Ms. Anderson knows, we quite often seek advice from her, just like I used to do when I'm looking at Deborah O'Regan here, seek advice from Steve Van Gore when I was in practice so that I'd keep out of ethical trouble. But if you folks would remember when we had quite a discussion about whether it was unethical for legislators to write letters of recommendation for people on legislative stationery. That was a year or so ago. And then when we met just last week or 2 weeks ago, we had quite a discussion on something. I don't remember what it was. But I think when you folks get input from legislators generally or sitting together as a group, you can get a different flavor than you will just reading the cold, dead letter of the law. And it's a long question, and I'm going to ask the leading question now. Do you agree?
I agree most definitely. And I can also, and you've been on the committee, Mr. Grunberg, you understand that a lot of what we do does come from the legislators, a lot of input. The discussion includes all nine members and not just the public members, and so there's a great deal of input from the legislators who are sitting there, and they let us know if they think we're going down the wrong road. Also, on top of that, when we do conduct and we ask for additional information, which we have the authority to do, we've asked Joyce many a times to go and find out what we don't know. And so I do agree with you, and I think it is important that we do understand the in and out and the workings of the legislature and traditionally how that applies to our role as overseers of the ethics code.
Thank you very much. I'm very satisfied.
Great. Thank you. And then we have
thank you for your willingness to serve again.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First off, thank you for agreeing to serve again. I agree that with all of the uproar and all the changes that we've made to the law in the 25th legislature, that continuity will be a big deal in the next couple of years. So first off, thank you for your willingness to step forward one more time. My question is, we have a tendency sometimes to hear a decision or a ruling by the Ethics Committee and start complaining about it, forgetting that we are the ones who passed the law in the first place. And we are sort of relying on the members of the committee and on Joyce Anderson to help us figure out when maybe we haven't quite been as clear as we thought we were in passing laws, or if maybe we didn't pass them in the best possible form. And I was wondering if at this time you had any suggestions of areas that have been frustrating for the committee to interpret, it's hard to understand what we meant, or areas that we might want to consider taking a second look at.
We just had a ethics training session down, and Joyce, if you could help me frame this, down in Juneau, and one of the big issues I think that needed to be readdressed was, constituent services. The issue regarding that is the language is very, very broad, and the way it is written, anything that you could possibly think of could be considered constituent services, which really left it a bind for us as far as interpreting that particular statute. And I think Representative Coghill, we had a brief discussion about it, or was there at that meeting, so he knows what I'm referring to. I think that would probably be the one that jumps out at me right now as one that really needs to be re-looked at again.
Thank you. And I would just, if I may, Madam Chair, reiterate that to the extent things come up, please, either directly or through Joyce, let us know so that we can take a look at it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And as acting chair today, I would echo Mr. Walker, that I've heard that same concern from many of my peers here, and we are happy that that issue is going to be looked at again. All of us have the same goal, and that is to serve our constituents to the best of our ability, no matter how much time it takes. Are there any further questions? Mr. Rules Chair, I'd entertain a motion.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sitting here daydreaming about the very thing that Mr. Walker brought up. I was going back trying to remember a conversation. Madam Chair, I would move that we go ahead and forward Mr. Walker's name to the full body for confirmation.
Are there any objections? All right. Thank you. With that, Mr. Walker, your name will be forwarded from this committee. And again, I thank you for the entire committee for your service and the time it takes from your own personal free time. And I'm sure it's not always fun, but we appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to... Mr. Cook, Dennis Cook, are you online?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, great. We're signing the confirmation sheet for Mr. Walker as it goes around, but while we're doing that, if you could also just give a very brief synopsis of why you are interested in serving, and then we'll see if there's any questions for you.
Thank you. Yes, I've served on the committee for some time. It's been a pleasure to work with both the committee members and with both the public members of the committee and the legislators on the committee over the years. I think during that time I have gained a fair insight into how the legislature works, perhaps also some of what works and some what doesn't work. Obviously from some of the recent indictments and so on, there are some things that haven't worked well. So there are things that that need correction, and things that should be encouraged and even broadened. The ethics statute is really complex, and it takes a while for one to get their feet on the ground with regard to it. I think I've done that over the years. I've seen a number of changes in the statute because of language that didn't comport with the way things need to work in order to get the business of a session done within the time that's allowed. I'm willing to serve again. It's something that I've sort of built into my schedule over the years, and enjoy the work. And I think that having been around, I have some continuity and some information. Digesting of information that's helpful to the committee.
Thank you. We appreciate very much your willingness to serve, and I can see by your resume that you are very busy in many activities, and so we appreciate that we are one of your priorities. Are there any members of the committee who have questions? Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to ask the same question of Mr. Cook, if there are any things that have come to his notice recently that he thinks the legislature should be taking a look at to improve the Ethics Act.
Well, the one that was mentioned is the one that's certainly on my radar now. We've been struggling with this question of constituent services, and it's really interesting, the struggle that we've had. You may recall that the question arose from a great deal of assistance that had been given to a constituent. And the first opinion we wrote tried to put a hour limit on, and that did not go over well at all. And so it was rewritten to simply do our best to interpret the law as it's written. The problem with the law, as Herman just noted, is that in the basic statute, 2460.030A2, it says you can't use public funds, facilities, for any purpose for the private benefit of a legislature, a legislative employee, or another person. So you can't use your office for the benefit of another person. Well, that doesn't make sense in view of what legislators do and constituent services. And none of the exceptions underneath there really address it. I mean, it wouldn't even allow you to write a letter of recommendation for somebody. And the committee has never taken the position that it does. But that's still what the basic underlying legislation says. And when you go back to say what benefit means back in the definition section, it is extremely broad language, and certainly it could even include a letter of recommendation. So there does need to be some addressing of that particular part of the statute, because everything you do for a constituent is conferring a private benefit as it's defined in the Act on that constituent. And particularly the case that we dealt with and tried to write an opinion on, we're happy to have the legislators define that for our benefit so that we don't have to struggle with it to the extent that we have, because right now the language simply can be read to not allow any constituent services at all. And there have been things over the years where it was kind of like this one, where everybody expects constituent services, so nobody's gone back and noticed even that the language really creates some difficulties for the committee. And it's not the first time that kind of thing's come up with the complexities of this act, but we certainly invite the input of the legislators and legislature as a whole on that area of constituent services at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Cook, for elaborating on that. I think it's really helpful, and I have a feeling the rules chairman and the representative from Spinard may be following up on that this session, trying to give you guys a little bit of help as you struggle through. And again, I just want to reiterate what the chairman said. Thank you so much for agreeing to serve again.
All right, next, Representative Gruenberg has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cook, you heard my question about seeking input from the rest of the legislators, if necessary, that I just asked Mr. Walker. Do you recall my question?
I certainly do, and I certainly agree with what he said, except that I do need to point out that there is our limitation of confidentiality, so that it becomes hard to speak in very specific terms about a case that's before us for decision that we're bound by confidentiality. Advisory opinions and informal advice, we're not bound in that same way. We can, in general terms, even on a case that we're bound by confidentiality, gather input. We usually have pretty good input, I think, from the legislators who are on the committee. And that's why they're, of course, assigned to the committee is that it's felt that their input will be useful to the committee. So it's not always necessary to go out beyond, but we have found ways to do that and welcome broad input for our education. Thanks.
To the chair. Yes, I certainly didn't mean to downplay the importance of the people on the committee, because they are absolutely key. And I wasn't thinking about getting involved in ongoing cases where you're considering an actual complaint, but more in the cases involving the vast bulk of your work, which is issuing advisory opinions, formal and informal, in that area. I certainly was not intending my question at all to go into cases in which you're actually considering whether to find probable cause or not.
Right, I understand that. And that's one reason we have our newsletter on the web and so on, and the informal advice is made available so that we can get feedback on it, and we certainly welcome the feedback back on the informal advice and the advisory opinions that are issued.
Thank you, and once again, I'd like to thank you, as well as Mr. Walker, for your willingness to be on this. How many years now have you been on this thing, sir?
Well, my resume says 1998, so I guess it's been about a decade.
You deserve combat pay. Thank you. I'm highly qualified. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Both you gentlemen, I have before me your resumes and a whole lot of other information, and everybody understands that this is the age of identity theft. And I know more things about you than I want to know, certainly more than I need to know, and yet you're required to put all this in print. Do you feel like maybe we should be revising our requirements as far as our reporting requirements are with regard to volunteers who simply want to serve the community and not be forced to publish easily? I mean, your investments, your personal address, the names of your kids, and things like that. Have we kind of really fallen off the cliff on saying what we need to know about you before you can volunteer is the following?
I guess I haven't looked at it as overly onerous. I mean, I do dread that APOC thing every year, but I sort of gotten used to just copying it down again because it doesn't change that much. It is a lot of information, but we're requiring it of the legislators, and if we're requiring it of the legislators, and we're going to be, in a sense, working with them and in some senses even judging their actions, I don't mind disclosing the same information myself.
And this is Herman Walker. I would agree with Skip to that extent, and believe me, I don't look forward to filling this thing out at all, and especially, you know, the attorney piece of it, because I still feel like I'm disclosing more than I feel comfortable with when it comes to my clients. However, all that being said, I do agree with Skip that if we're requiring of the legislators and we're sitting in judgment to some extent of the legislators, I believe full disclosure is necessary in this type of voluntary situation. I would agree with you, though, Representative Gatto, that depending upon the voluntary nature of the committee, that this may be overkill.
Okay. Listen, you make me very happy. I thought you'd say absolutely it's overdone, but you're okay with it, so I'm okay with it. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from members of the committee? All right. Mr. Rules Chairman, I would entertain a motion, please.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a note that was brought to my attention that in his previous 1963 employment, Mr. Cook did something that I did down in the Coggill's General Store, and that was cutting cheese. they actually had these wheels of cheese that you could cut into different segments, and I can remember the markings on the cheese cutter, so I just thought I'd bring it up. Thank you, Mr. Cook, for willing to serve, and I look forward. I don't know if I look forward to working with you. We'll see. But, Madam Chair, I move that we forward Mr. Cook's name to the full body for confirmation to the Ethics Committee.
Thank you. Are there any objections from members? All right. With that, Mr. Cook, your name will be moved forward. And again, thank you so much. We appreciate all your work. And I know Joyce Anderson is online also. Joyce, thank you very much for all that you do. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. We'll sign the paperwork. And then I understand you folks need to dial over to the Senate to testify. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So if you want to go offline right now for that, you're okay.
All right. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. And while we are signing, the next piece of business that we have before us is House Bill number 88. And Jane Pearson from Chair Ramirez's office will give us a brief introduction, and then we have Deborah, who will identify her name and affiliation, and we'll go from there. So, welcome.
Yes, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Jay Ramirez. And House Bill 88 is an act extending the termination date for the Board of Governors, the Alaska Bar Association, providing for an effective date. In the Division of Legislative Audit, they recommended that the termination date for the board be extended to June 30th. 2017, which is exactly what this bill does. I have here sitting next to me Deborah O'Regan. Also online is the President of the Bar Association, Mitch Seaver, President-elect Sid Billingsley, and Bar Counsel Steve Van Gore, and they could probably answer questions a lot better than I could. Right.
Thank you. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you. Madam Chair, as Jane said that our bar president is on the phone in Ketchikan. The plane overflew Ketchikan this morning, or he would be here in person.
Okay, and then for the record, just your full name and affiliation.
Deborah O'Regan, Executive Director, Alaska Bar Association.
Okay.
So I guess I would defer to my bar president to speak it.
All righty, Mr. Seaver, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. If you would please identify your full name and your affiliation, and then we're happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you. My full name is Mitchell Seaver, but only my mother calls me Mitchell when she's mad. I'm serving this year as president of the Alaska Bar Association and, president of the Board of the Governors, and am here in that capacity. I did have a chance to review the sponsor statement, and I think it sets forth succinctly and clearly, you know, why we're here and what it is that the Bar Association does. As it states, our primary activities, primary responsibilities have to do with the admission of lawyers to the bar in this state and discipline of those lawyers to make sure that they continue to adhere to professional standards throughout their practice. Both of those activities are subject to the supervision of the Alaska State Supreme Court. The sponsor statement again says that there are, you know, a wide number of activities that the Bar Association is responsible for or involved in, including fee arbitration for any disputes between clients and their lawyers that can be handled in hopefully a speedy and informal process. Providing continuing legal education, loyal referral services, and the like. A couple that weren't mentioned that I think are noteworthy is we are increasingly involved in trying to promote the provision of pro bono legal services to low-income Alaskans, and we also maintain a fund for client protection to reimburse clients that have been damaged by a dishonest act from an attorney, at least where there's no insurance available to cover the loss that they may have suffered. I guess another thing I think is worth noting is that through both our professional staff and countless number of volunteers, members of the bar and members of the public, these functions are carried out without any cost to the state itself. And finally, I would like to point out that I believe it's the third time in the past 4 years that the Board of Governors has been before the legislature for a sunset determination. Each of those times, an 8-year extension has been recommended. It's been, shorter periods have been allowed, but again, 8 years has been recommended, and that's certainly what we would like to see happen. I can try and answer any of your questions, but as you mentioned, Deborah's there, Mr. Van Gore, and Sid Billingsley, who's been on the board longer than I, and I may end up having to defer to them. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Before we take questions from members of the committee, why don't we go ahead and have testimony from Ms. Billingsley and Mr. Van Gore that may answer some of our questions. Sid, are you available? Can you hear us?
Madam Chair, I understand Sid Billingsley was in trial until approximately 1:30 today, so she may not have made it to the LIO
office. Okay, I totally understand that. Mr. Van Gore, are you available?
I am indeed, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All righty. Would you like to present your full name, affiliation, and give your testimony?
Actually, I think I committed an error in saying yes in the testimony column. I'm certainly available to answer any questions. Okay. My name is Stephen Van Gore. As Mr. Seavers said, I'm only called Stephen when my mother is upset at me. I'm generally known as Steve Van Gore. I've had the privilege of working with the Alaska Bar Association since 1983 as its bar counsel, and also more or less as its general counsel. So I've had the privilege over the years to work with a number of members of the Bar Association serving as volunteers on the Board of Governors. And I have been impressed by their dedication and their willingness to undertake very difficult issues that confront the board on a regular basis, not the least of which is the discipline of members of the bar. In a lot of respects, the Alaska Bar Association is fortunate, and at times I've described this as the golden age of the Alaska Bar Association, because at this point, we're still a relatively small bar by comparison to other bars around the country. And as a result, I believe we're a more collegial bar. But like other bars, we do have problems with lawyers, and unfortunately, a lawyer with an intent to cause harm can cause harm in a very short period of time. The Board of Governors has been consistently interested in the timely and complete investigation of complaints and the prosecution of those complaints through our hearing process and ultimately for decision by the Supreme Court. So, on balance, by comparison to other bar associations, I think we are in a golden age in that a lot of members realize that their actions are under scrutiny of other lawyers, that they can be brought up to the bar association if they violate the rules of professional conduct. And unlike larger jurisdictions, for example, Los Angeles County, which I understand has 230 Superior Court judges, in Alaska, you're likely to appear in front of the same Superior Court judge, depending on your community, day after day or week after week, and so you can't afford to act in a way that would be unprofessional. But if you do, we're there to take care of it. The other aspect that Mr. Seaver pointed out is admissions. Alaska has a tough bar exam. I think anyone who has taken the Alaska bar exam will tell you that. But it's an examination designed to provide a showing of minimal competence to practice law. It's a combination of a nationally administered 200-question multi-state bar exam, as well as questions designed to test an applicant's knowledge of Alaska law and the ability to spot issues and to thoroughly explain a legal issue or a legal problem in a way that clients, lawyers, other lawyers, and the court would expect a lawyer to be able to do. I've had the privilege of working with Deborah O'Regan since I came to work for the bar in 1983, and we collaborate on a regular basis concerning these primary issues. So. I would encourage the committee to recommend the extension of the bar. I guess I'm coming from a somewhat biased viewpoint, having worked for the bar for most of my professional career. But I truly believe, from my perspective, that the bar is functioning in a way that is set up in the statute. We are accountable to the Supreme Court, and if extended, we will certainly continue to do the work that we're required to do.
All right, thank you. Are there members with questions? Okay. Representative Coghill.
Yeah, there's probably a couple questions I'd like to ask, but one of them was, since we just approved two lawyers to serve on the Ethics Committee, one of the things that just immediately jumps to my mind, and I'm open to setting me straight on it, but it just seems to me at this point that the Bar Association is the one that does the policing on the lawyers that actually hire them. Help me understand the conflict of interest that might come up there, or how the methodology in disciplining members doesn't fall into conflict of interest or unethical behavior. Just help me understand that.
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, since the early 80s, the Bar Association has had public members on its governing body, the Board of Governors. In disciplinary matters, the Board of Governors sits as the disciplinary board. So every case that comes to the Board of Governors is considered not only by the lawyers elected by other lawyers throughout the state, as well as an at-large member, but also by the three public members appointed by the governor. In addition to public participation on the Board of Governors, we have public participation at our disciplinary hearing committee level. Under our rules, at least one of the three hearing committee members must be a public member and participate in that process. In my experience, the participation of the public member has been a tremendous asset in the adjudication of these important matters, because they're bringing to the table a perspective that is in a large degree different from the perspective of the lawyers, or maybe the narrower perspective of the lawyers sitting on the panel. And that's the same with the public members sitting on the Board of Governors. There's always an appearance that, I guess for lack of a better term or lack of a better cliche, Representative Coghill, that the fox is guarding the hen house. But I can tell you that the oversight that we have in the hearing process, not only at the hearing committee and at the disciplinary board level, has been the public's assurance that these important professional responsibilities are being met. I guess you could say that a lawyer investigating a lawyer represents a conflict of interest, but I think you have to ask yourself who would be in a position to assess whether the lawyer's conduct violated the rules of professional conduct or not. I don't decide these cases, Representative Coghill. I prosecute these cases. I investigate these cases, and then I put them in front of an unbiased panel, including public members, to decide them. Either at the hearing committee level or at the board level. I think, as in any profession, there's a certain degree of expertise that you need in your investigators and your prosecutors to understand the issues involved, what's important and what isn't. And I think that would be the same whether you were dealing with a complaint against an architect, a doctor, a pharmacist, and so forth.
Madam Chair, and I appreciate that answer, because it was not meant to be an underhanded question. It was just a, you know, I'm not in that world, and I'm looking into that world after having just talked about our own ethics world. So the way I take it is, having the public members come into the discussion as you do whatever discovery you have to do, that kind of brings it enough light into it to keep the integrity high. Do I understand that correctly?
That's certainly been my experience. I'm sorry, through the chair. That's certainly been my experience, Representative Coghill. Cases come to the Bar Association, to the Disciplinary Board of the Supreme Court by one of two ways. We either prosecute these cases in front of a hearing committee, or we present a stipulated disposition to our disciplinary board and then on to the Supreme Court. But either way, there's public input, and that public input has been extremely valuable.
Madam Chair, I've got about two or maybe three more questions. One of them has to do with the audit report that came out, and recommendation number three was the modification of bylaws to address conference call board meetings. Has that been discussed within the board, and whoever wants to answer that?
If I may, through the chair, Representative Coghill, I drafted some bylaw amendments for the board's consideration at its meeting last Friday to address that issue, and the board voted to publish them for member comment as the Supreme Court rule requires, and I expect that those bylaw amendments to deal with that issue will be back before the board at its May meeting in Juneau.
Okay. And then second to the last question is recommendation number two. Looks to me like it's being worked on. Is that a work in progress as far as getting disciplined lawyers on the website?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, this is something that as bar counsel and person responsible for the discipline section, I've been very interested in, because a great deal of my staff time is taken up in answering calls from the public about a lawyer's public disciplinary history. We are indeed in the process of revising our database so that this information can be published on our website as it is in other jurisdictions. And we're certainly working very hard to get that accomplished.
Thank you, and I appreciate that answer. I am so grateful for our ledge audit group. They really helped me dig into some of this stuff. Yep. And as they outlined in, I think, page 19 of their report, your Article 1 talks about the five things that you talk about as the purposes of the bar. Mm-hmm. And it looks to me like in the report you do very well, but one of them I have a question on, if I might just ask it as a general question, and we could have, I can't remember your name.
Deborah O'Regan.
Deborah, maybe answer the question if you wish. And that is just to promote reform in law. And I was just wondering how that is normally done through your process. If, for example, is it done primarily to court rules, or is it done to suggest laws to the legislature?
Because we are, through the chair, Representative Coghill, it is mostly done through court rules.
Okay.
Because as a mandatory unified bar, members have to belong to the Alaska Bar Association in order to practice law in Alaska. We do not lobby other than right now.
Well, I would,
and so we do propose court rules and amendments as such.
Well, Madam Chair, if I might, to those members of the Bar Association listening, became apparent to me in doing one section of law that required a lot of court rules to make it work between the child welfare laws of Alaska and the Indian child welfare laws of the United States, that we the court rules actually showed us a pathway to make our laws work better. I think the legislature is open to discussion. We're continually pushing up against court rules, but if we could see why our law requires that, especially if there's either a conflict or a place where they could work more smoothly, I think that would be an open discussion for many of us legislators.
Thank you, Representative Coghill. I think we would love to have an overview on that in this committee. If you would like to work on that with Jane, we'll schedule you for that. Are there any other questions?
We haven't talked about it yet.
Oh. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a lot of reading here, but one of them caught my eye, and it was on page 13, and it's a couple paragraphs on the top. It begins with, additionally, the Alaska Bar Association also provides services that are more typically provided by professional associations rather than regulatory agencies. And then it goes on to name them. It only caught my eye because we rarely want government to be competing with the private sector. And so I'm just curious if, in your opinion, that is what you're doing.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, I don't believe that we are competing with the private sector in the things that we are doing. She mentions a couple of things that would not be done through the private sector. Actually, the Lawyers Fund for Client Protection is not something that would be done by a regulatory agency. That's the fund that we have to reimburse clients who have been harmed by dishonest lawyers. The fee arbitration process is, again, something that we do that a regulatory agency wouldn't do, where lawyers are required to participate in fee arbitration if the client requests it. The same thing with the mediation process we offer. We do have a lawyer referral service, which is something that is done sometimes by private organizations. And I guess I don't feel that we compete with them because there's so many different ways to find a lawyer now. I mean, probably most people, I think the number of calls to our lawyer referral service has declined with the advent of the internet. And they talk about, through the Bar Foundation, providing earnings on the lawyers' trust accounts. The interest goes to the Bar Foundation, which distributes to organizations like Alaska Legal Services. Those are the kind of things that, again, are not usually done by a state agency, that the Alaska Bar Association does, most of which would not be done by anybody if we didn't do them.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Coghill and then Gruenberg.
Just a note on that. Mm-hmm. One of the very few organizations that require pro bono work. It's a very interesting world and greatly appreciated. But it is an interesting requirement that is put upon the members.
Well, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Coghill, we don't require lawyers to participate in pro bono at this time, but we do have a full-time staff person who is our pro bono director, whose job is to get lawyers to do more pro bono work. And so she's been in position for about 3.5 years. And, there are some, there's some more movement that way.
So then from some of my lawyer friends, just the pressure of being asked is enough to be a requirement to them. Okay.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you. I have three things.
All righty.
Go for a while here. I'd like the members to look at page 7 of the LBNA report. And once again, we find the recommendation number 1 is for mandatory rather than voluntary CLE. And as Ms. O'Regan and the folks on the line are aware, I have been a strong supporter of that over the years. And now we're, as I understand it, in a 3-year trial period, moving in that direction. And I'm wondering if you can give us an interim report on how that is progressing and how you see that will progress, whether you're going to continue it being voluntary or it's going to go to mandatory, and if so, what kinds of additional incentives you plan to give, because I'm as guilty as anybody else. It's a pain to have to take continuing legal education, but it's essential. Through the chair, Ms. Regan.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg, through the chair. I don't see the Supreme Court as going backwards on this issue as far as going from mandatory requirements to voluntary requirements. They just passed the rule effective last year, as you know, and now they had to have completed their first requirement of mandatory 3 hours of ethics by December 31st. I understand that there are some lawyers that were doing their program on December 31st. In fact, we had three showings of our somebody's husband. And plus they have to report how many hours that they did do. What we're finding is that this is an educational time for us all. It's an educational time for our members, number one, to learn that, of course, they have to do this requirement, and then how they can fulfill it, and for us to educate our members how they can do this. I mean, some members thought they had to take one particular class and no others, but we said we can take any ethics class to fulfill it. And then we had to, advise them how they could report. And then, of course, then on the administrative end, we're finding out through the Bar Association staff just the logistics and the administration. It's a learning experience for us. You know, what are some of the issues and problems that we're learning to deal with? And when you're doing something of this magnitude, when you're having 3,000 lawyers all report to you at one time. And so we haven't finished the reporting yet because right now we've got lots of people that have extensions, because they weren't able to complete it in time the first year. Some people, I say, were caught unawares, even though it's been a rule for a year. And so they have until April 15th is really the drop-dead deadline when their license would be suspended if they have not complied by that time. And at that time, we should, you know, say, well, how many people made the compliance and how many people got it suspended, how many got reinstated. And, you know, we'll have some better numbers then. But, you know, people are becoming more and more aware and more educated, you know, every week that we do this. And so I think we'll have some good numbers. And the Supreme Court has asked us to come back to them with numbers and statistics and reports on how it went and what some of the problems were. And I don't see them going back to a voluntary program.
If I may continue.
Follow up.
Second question. I think that it's excellent that this is a start for mandatory, and it's just in the field of ethics. Are you going to move down the road to either mandatory or some more incentivized program in the area of the substantive laws?
I'm sorry, Representative.
Continuing legal education.
Yes. To the chair, Representative Grunberg, you may recall that the Board of Governors had actually made a recommendation to the Supreme Court for 12 hours of continuing legal education. My understanding is that the Supreme Court was not unanimous on this and that they saw this requiring ethics as sort of a starting point compromise.
Right.
And that they went with ethics because they thought that was the most important issue to deal with first. Mm-hmm. And so if it's up to the Board of Governors, at least, you know, and boards do change, but the board was the one who said we want 12 hours of continuing education required. And so I would see that that would be their continuing recommendation. And then, of course, the Supreme Court is going to do what the Supreme Court is going to do, which is changing, too, as we speak.
I understand. May I continue?
Follow up.
It is my desire, speaking personally, that if this current program seems to be successful, that the board renew its request for continuing legal education beyond ethics to the Supreme Court. And I'm putting my views on the record, and I'm happy to be to amplify that. I'm not at this point, well, I hadn't thought of doing a letter of intent or anything on the bill, but if you're extended for a significant period of time, like the 8 years, you won't be back before the Judiciary Committee for another 8 years. Mm-hmm. And certainly that's too long to wait if this is appearing to be a success before making some broader continuing legal education requirements. So it's not just in the field of ethics, mm-hmm. but if you're a family lawyer, mm-hmm. you got to know more about family lawyer, or criminal lawyer, whatever it is. And I would appreciate, and I don't know how we can do this, if we can ask the Board of Governors what their plans are in this area. Would that be appropriate for us?
Well, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, you can certainly do that. But as I say, you know, a Board of Governors today cannot bind the Board of Governors in 3 years.
Right.
Because you have, okay. So the board now can certainly make it their intent that they would recommend what they did recommend to the Supreme Court is for the 12 hours. But what a board does in 3 years, it might be a different makeup.
I see. Okay. If I may continue. Second area.
No, this is your third area.
Whatever.
Totally unfazed.
This committee has a life of its own. Uh-huh. The next area is some states are starting to provide programs for specialization. And you could be a specialized workers' comp lawyer or whatever, you know, in some pilot fields. And I know a number of bars do that. And that's becoming more of a trend, I think it's safe to say, nationally. Are there any thoughts of having any pilot programs of that type in this state?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the board had talked about this in the past. And the bottom line was they thought that we were too small of a bar association to be able to put on an effective specialization certification. Mm-hmm. And what they did at the time is they said that, you know, I think the American Bar Association has like six areas that they grant specialization in. And they said that they would recognize those specialized areas, but they did not think that we, at our size, would be able to do an effective job of certifying specializations. Maybe Steve can remember that discussion as well with the Board of Governors better than I can, but that's my memory.
With that, how are they going to, quote, recognize it? Is there going to be a rule, or is there a rule in place? I'm not aware of having seen such a rule that would, if you do meet the ABA requirements, allow you specifically to state that, or I'm wondering how that's being implemented.
Yeah.
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, the specific rule is Rule 7.4 of the Alaska Rules of Professional Conduct, and what that rule provides is that a lawyer can state that they specialize or use words of similar import if their specialization has been accredited by an organization accredited by the American Bar Association. So that language is already part of the Supreme Court rule.
I see, and that's Rule 7.4, which I...
Of the Alaska Rules of Professional Conduct.
Right. I've got this here, and if members want to see that, we can distribute that.
Okay.
If I may continue in a couple of other areas.
Can I give you one more?
Sure.
And then
this relates to potential amendments. I just need to ask a couple of questions.
Okay. Because the sponsor of the bill is not here, I don't believe it is his desire to have any amendments to the bill. Let me just explain. What I would like to do is to move the bill from committee. My understanding is this going to finance?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what I would like to do is move the bill from committee today and ask if you and I and Representative Ramirez could sit down and have a meeting, and if we could talk about things that you might feel would be good amendments, or as you had mentioned, a letter of intent.
May explain here. If you would look at the bill itself, Ms. O'Regan, I think there's at least a technical possibility that the governor wouldn't sign the bill before July the 1st of this year. And we had a problem a few years ago that wasn't caught until it was on the House floor, that because of the delayed date of the enactment of a sunset bill, the Board of Nursing would have gone out of existence for about 90 days. Mm-hmm. And so my first request, which I would think would be non-controversial, would be on line 7 to say, and it's conceptual, instead of takes effect immediately, I would say takes effect July 1 of this year. They'd have to draft it, whether that statute is the statute it applies under. But that way, that even if the governor didn't sign the bill until after that, it would retroactively keep the organization in effect. That was my first question, which I don't think there's any benefit in having this particular bill.
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, it's my understanding that the Bar Association has a one-year wind-down period were it to go past, so it really has till 2010.
Okay. Well, then that would, yeah, you're right. So that wouldn't,
and
I don't think.
Representative Gruenberg, I think your point is extremely valid. I know that Representative Ramirez will be presenting this in finance, and so that's why I think if the three of us meet.
Sure.
And I know he would rather personally make that.
No problem. And the
recommendation.
And the other one is in the title. And since we have seen, particularly with the Board of Governors of the Bar in the past, bills introduced for an eight-year or whatever it is, and then for some political reason, I'm going to be very frank, impugning somebody's motives probably, but I'll be frank anyway, that the thing goes to a year or two. So I'd like to see in the title where it extends the termination of the Board of Governors, and I would say to June 30th, 2017, and that way when the bill goes through the process, we're not going to see it chopped down. And that's my second potential to the bill. And I would ask through the chair, would the Board of Governors think those would be beneficial amendments.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Coghill.
I think the first question should go to the sponsor of the bill, not to the Bar Association.
I agree. And what I would ask, again, I think that second point is extremely valid also. And so I would ask your indulgence, Representative Gruenberg, excuse me, I apologize. And if you feel you need to vote against it because the amendments aren't in it, I totally understand. But I would like to move the bill from committee as is, and then you and I and the sponsor, let's sit down and talk about those specific things. I understand your intent, and it's very worthy.
I'm not saying I'm going to make the amendment. I'm just asking if Ms. O'Regan can say whether the Board of Governors would support those if those amendments were made.
But I think Representative Coghill has a very valid point. If the sponsor of the bill doesn't want it in, the Board of Governors doesn't need to comment on it. So
whatever you wish.
Representative Lynn.
And your recommendation might just put amend.
Madam Chair.
Representative Coghill.
First of all, I am not yet in my own heart 100% convinced of the 2017 date. But I would not hold it up in committee. But mainly because of some of the things that we might be wanting to watch, including some of the continuing education issues. So if the legislature is going to be involved in discussion, I think there's always that tension between what the Supreme Court gets to do in the working of jurisprudence and how the legislature gets to look over its shoulder along the way. And so putting it out 8 years is assuming that there's two legislative sessions that have no interest in this. And so, I'm not totally interested in that at this point, but I'm not willing to hold it up in committee at this point, especially I don't want to amend a bill with the powerful chairman of this committee not here to have that conversation.
I would just to respond to that say that we are routinely asked to extend other governing boards, licensing boards, right, for periods of up to 8 years. Number one, we don't generally do that unless the Legislative Budget and Audit Report recommends that, which they have done in this case. And number two, this is not the only board where LB&A has said, well, this is some things you might do in the profession, but they have recommended that the Board of Governors be extended like these other licensing board. It hasn't stopped the legislature from doing that in other cases. And I would not be saying what I'm saying if we hadn't been playing with this board for the last number of years. That's not fair.
Representative Coghill.
I know we're not supposed to be debating amendments until they've been put up, but just on the general discussion, I don't know that we've been playing with the board. We've just been asking to stay informed. I don't. There might be some people that might have a motivation other than that, but I think there are some things that, first of all, this is one of the very few places where the protectors of the law in the Supreme Court, the makers of the law in the legislature, and those who have to make it work actually have a conversation. So it is one of those few places where we get to do it, and so. My motive is absolutely pure in that regard, that we keep having a conversation and we don't skip over two legislative sessions to do that. That would be pure conversation, but as far as the recommendations go, there are some things in there that are ongoing, and just we're not going to hear about them until 8 years is up, the way I see it.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to get too far into this, but as I recall, last year the offer was extended by the Bar Association to the legislature that they would be happy to come down every year, right, even if they don't have a sunset bill. And as I recall, it was the chairman of the Judiciary Committees who chose not to take them up on it last year. I believe the offer was extended indefinitely that they would come down every year, and it was we were attempting to schedule meetings, and it didn't happen on our end, not on their end. Okay. Just wanted to make sure that was
point well
that
taken.
Was out there.
Point well taken.
All right, thank you. Well,
Madam Chair, then, if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and make a motion to move it.
Please, I would like to invite you to.
Madam Chair, I move that we pass House Bill 88, in this version A, true, from committee with individual recommendations in attached fiscal note.
Are there any objections? All right, with that, we will all sign, and this bill will move from committee, and the time is 2:36, and this committee is adjourned.